Heidi Holton, thanks for choosing this KAXE KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton. Joining me is Aaron Brown, blogger from Minnesota Brown, also one of the people on the panel with me coming up. It's less than a week now, Aaron.
It's now getting pretty close, pretty real.
We could go yesterday. We'll be live from the Rife Center interviewing the now two candidates for Minnesota governor. And we'll get into that race in a little bit. But I think, so we talked to Joe Radinovich in our last hour. We've got a call into the campaign of the winner in District 8 for the Republican Party. That was Pete Stauber. And we'll kind of talk with them about how they're going forward now. And they're in the generals. We're out of primary time. But let's start with that District 8 race. I know you've been able to break it down from different polling places and all that kind of stuff. General thoughts, first of all.
Yeah, well, it was a strong win for Joe Radinovich. He was the only of the five DFL candidates to really show strength district-wide. You know, certain candidates had strength in areas. But Radinovich never really finished lower than second in most places. In fact, he didn't lose many places at all. He won all but two or three of the counties and really showed a lot of strength. So really, you look at it, and that's what his campaign got for the money. They raised the most money and had the probably the strongest media strategy as a result, having enough money to buy ads. I think that in a low name ID election made a huge difference. You know, I can't tell how many people contacted me this week with the question, people I know who are not dumb people, who's running? You know, what's going on? And so a lot of people were struggling to figure out who these candidates were. And Joe Radinovich had an answer for them, and it was enough for him to win, and win convincingly. Of course, Pete Stauber won his primary easily. He was expected to. He faced a critic of President Trump in his primary, and obviously in a very Trump-friendly Republican Party that worked to Stauber's favor. And so, if it was just Radinovich and Stauber, you'd say, wow, that's something. But we've got an extra twist. Skip Sandman, the independent, is running, and he's running on a campaign surrounding the environment, surrounding a lot of issues that are more progressive. And as a result, whatever he gets, and it could be up to 5%, it could be more, probably affects Radinovich more than Stauber. So it's a struggle. It's a challenge for Radinovich now to get not just some moderate votes, but he's also got to win over his left flank as well, who might be considering Skip Sandman. So it'll be a challenging race, and it'll be easily number one in the country for spending, number one for attention. We're going to see. So if you thought you got a lot of mailers before, you're going to get mailers, and you're going to get TV ads and a lot more.
So you said there were a couple of counties where he was not first. Was that Michelle Lee then?
Michelle Lee carried Cook County. Michelle Lee carried her home county of Carlton County, and she carried the city of Duluth pretty handily, but not by enough. I thought she'd get more out of those places, and I also thought she'd do a little better in some other counties, and so she came in, I want to say, around 28-29% to Radinovich's 42-43%, and so it wasn't particularly close. You see a lot of missed opportunities for her. She had almost no money, and had she had a media strategy, some ads, some things to get her name out there, she could have been a little closer in this race, but a lot of progressives, the left flank of the party, had put their hopes in Michelle Lee, and she fell short. Another big story in the race was the underperformance of State Rep Jason Metza. He carried his home House district in the Iron Range 6B by a large margin over Joe Radinovich, but everywhere else he finished third or actually fourth in a lot of places. North Branch Mayor Kirsten Kennedy did finish fourth overall, but she was close to Metza in third place, despite the fact that Metza spent arguably 50 or 60 times more money than her. So that was an interesting story, and probably credit to Radinovich's win there. I think Radinovich got a lot of votes on the iron range that would have otherwise gone to Jason Metsa. That seemed clear to me.
Okay. So it's kind of confusing to me. So if we were looking at this race for Joe Radinovich, he has had maybe more moderate views on things like copper nickel mining. Not made huge stances really so far.
Yeah, he's supported. For instance, one of the big issues is copper nickel mining in the 8th district, and it's a local issue in that it refers to a couple of specific proposed projects in and around the Iron Range. But it's a hot-button political issue that's really divided, particularly the DFL, which has always had to weigh its labor and jobs coalition with its environmental coalition. And Joe Radinovich has, as a legislator, fallen on the side of the labor jobs side. He's supported copper nickel mining, but he's trying to thread a very narrow needle where he can say to the environmental coalition, you know, I support mining, but I also support environmental regulation and holding companies to account. That's, you know, that, as you know from covering this issue, it's tough to appease both sides in the debate, and he's trying to. His opponent, Pete Stauber, doesn't have to worry about that. The Republican Party is anti-regulation, generally speaking, and has, generally speaking, supported mining wholeheartedly. So if that's your issue, it becomes really tricky for Radinovich. But I think what we saw in this primary and what we've seen in other races is that mining is a huge issue for some voters, but it's not the only issue, and there's a lot of voters who they might have an opinion about the issue, but it's not nearly their top priority. And we saw that in the 8th district yesterday too. I don't think Radinovich's support was because he was a mining proponent. It was for other reasons, and a lot of the other candidates, the same could be said. So we'll see. It's a good test. This election will be a good test of where the district's at. It's been drifting towards the Republican column, no doubt about it. And if we look at turnout yesterday, which was a big part of the story, I knew DFL turnout would be high. I was surprised it didn't break a record in the 8th district. I don't know if they broke the record statewide.
Yeah, I didn't hear the final.
It was very
close
to the state record. Secretary of State Steve Simon said it was a high turnout election, huge record-breaking turnout in the 5th district for a primary in Minneapolis. But the 8th district didn't break its record. Of course, it's a high turnout region. But I was expecting about 75,000 DFL votes in this district primary, and we only got just around 70,000. Okay. So the turnout was high, but not shockingly so. And Republican turnout, despite it was not considered to be a really marquee race between Harry Welty and Pete Stauber, they had more than 50,000 votes in that primary. So it suggests that it's a close district. And while a lot of those Republicans were voting in the governor's race, which we'll talk about, they had a reason to vote. It shows that there's some enthusiasm on both sides. And therefore, you know, as advertised, this is going to be quite a marquee race.
You know, you've said all along that this district is huge geographically.
Mm-hmm. It's like a state, really.
Yeah, and the interest that people have there, because I know you had said, you know, maybe even a couple of weeks ago, don't count Michelle Lee out because you don't know what her name recognition 30 years on television would do. But then there's also the thing of not everybody in District 8 would have got the Duluth channel, so they wouldn't have known
her. Or would have watched her channel as opposed to some other channel. Yeah.
Right. So, so it's interesting to me how, like, you try to figure out this district, and there's almost
the real loser here was KBGR. Yeah, no, I'm kidding, but
in Brainerd, for instance, where I grew up, we didn't get the Duluth
channels.
You
watched the Twin Cities channels, and so Brainerd area didn't have that connection
at all.
The southern part of the district didn't have that connection at all. And I think you could argue that her results were poorer in those areas, perhaps just because of name recognition. You know, one of the things that's interesting is that people, believe it or not, outside of the political universe, you and me interviewing all the candidates and doing what we do, you know, people live their lives, and while they care and they follow the news, they don't necessarily keep tabs on these, especially when the primaries are so big.
Yeah.
All these candidates, trying to keep track of them is hard. And frankly, as a person who does it, it's not rewarding. I mean, it's hard. It's work. Right. And it can be a challenge sometimes and emotionally draining to keep track of the comings and goings of every little politician who wanders along. So, you know, you can see why name ID is a big factor here. That won't be a factor come November. Everybody's going to know Pete Stauber and Joe Radenovich, and they're going to know the president, who is going to be a big factor on the ballot. And so, you know, people will have their opinions. I don't expect to be asked many questions about the November general. I think people are going to have a strong opinion coming into that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's talk about the governor's race. So that's Aaron Brown. I'm Heidi Holton. We are two of the people on the panel. Aaron is our liberal commentator for Dig Deep. Chuck is our conservative. You guys will be on the panel. I'll be on the panel. We really want to put this forum together in a way where we honor where we live, where we grew up, where we've chosen to stay as adults and work, mm-hmm. and ask questions that matter to people here. Let's talk about who won last night.
Yeah. Well, on the DFL side, it was a three-way race. I think it was surprising in that Tim Walz won the race, which maybe wasn't super surprising. He was considered one of the front runners. And early on, he was the front runner, you know, before the race got crazier with around filing time. So that wasn't shocking. But in second place was Erin Murphy, the endorsed candidate, who many considered to be the also-ran. They thought she had no chance. The polls showed her in a distant third. And she, with a strong urban turnout, came up to about a third of the vote. She lost by about 9 points. But beat Lori Swanson, who was leading the polls two weeks prior to the election, and she finished a distant third. She did very well in the 8th district, though, but other than the 8th district and a few other places in the 6th district, she did very poorly in this primary, and so Lori Swanson finished a fairly distant third, I think was a surprise, with Rick Nolan as her running mate, the congressman from the 8th. Rick Nolan delivered his votes in the 8th. That was clear, but that ticket did not have what it took to win statewide.
I want you to be honest about this. Do you think it had Erin Murphy not winning this race? Did it have to do with urban versus rural voters? Was it that she was a woman? What do you think?
Oh, that's a tough question. And of course, that's one of the questions we're looking at in the wake of 2016 and moving through 2018. It was the first major party all-female ticket, too. And whether that was a factor, I mean, do I know the hearts and minds of the population? I noticed comments and things from some who would indicate that they were uncomfortable with that. They were also uncomfortable with the fact that they were two urban women from the Twin Cities area, not even though all of the tickets are at least half urban, and in fact most of them were pretty urban. But Tim Walz was a greater Minnesota voice, southern Minnesota, Mankato. And so he probably benefited from that, too. Murphy was the most liberal of the three candidates, probably had staked out that position as well, though that probably helped her in the end. I think a lot of her last-minute votes were progressives looking for their candidate. So I'd say she overperformed from expectations, obviously disappointing to finish second. That doesn't feel very good. But that's there's a lot of things going on. You know, a lot of what we see in politics is actually culture kind of spilled into politics. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things we can look at. Though I do think she didn't have as much TV. Just like with Michelle Lee in the 8th district, you know, just because you follow DFL politics and you know Erin Murphy got the endorsement, or you follow the legislature and know her from her work in the House, That makes you one of a minority of people, not one of a majority. And I think Murphy, like Lee, could have used some more media attention. And the other thing is, there was this whole liberal kind of progressive movement. They didn't want Lori Swanson because of her controversies from her office, and she wasn't very popular with DFL activists. And so there was this move before the election, you got to elect one of the progressives, and that was considered to be Walz or Murphy. And because Walz had a better position in the polls, a lot of the arguments at the end were, hey, I know you like Murphy, but vote for Walz because he's the progressive who can get through. I kind of wonder if a poll that showed like the result from today was released a few days before the election, how would progressive voters have reacted. Would they have voted for Walz, or would they have considered Murphy? We'll never know.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
One of those things. But definitely a good win for Walz. And on the Republican side, I think we're burying the lead. I think the
yes.
big story of yeah. the night was Jeff Johnson's upset of a former governor, Tim Pawlenty. Now, if you go back to our tapes on Dig Deep, Chuck and I thought it was more than possible that Jeff Johnson could do this. And I the way I wrote it on my blog was, if you talk to an actual Republican in the 8th District and actually talk to them about their opinion about their candidates, it's not surprising that Jeff Johnson won. He was more likable, more trusted for Republicans than Pawlenty was. Pawlenty's term in office didn't end well. There was a large deficit. There was a lot of, a lot of Republicans felt that he had made too many deals with the Democrats. He had done a lot of things while running for president to kind of position himself. And so it didn't look good. And then he goes and works on Wall Street, and then he comes back to run for governor, thinking everything will be the way it was before. Well, obviously, a lot has changed. And his comments critical of President Trump during the campaign obviously came back. And in the Republican electorate right now, it's a Trump world. And they support the president. And Pawlenty was seen as soft on the president. Johnson was not. Pretty easy win for Johnson in the end. And I don't think a lot of people expected that. I don't think Democrats expected that, because I think their challenge now, they had just drawn up a whole playbook for Tim Pawlenty, and they got to throw it out because they're running against Jeff Johnson now. So I think that'll be interesting. And as we do our forum and try to hear again, a lot of people are just now joining the conversation. Mm-hmm. A lot of voters are just joining this conversation. So they're going to be meeting Jeff Johnson and Tim Walz, maybe for the first time. And I'm looking forward to framing this around rural issues and northern Minnesota issues, because that's one of the things we tried to do early in this general election campaign. We wanted to have a forum that was about rural Minnesota.
Yeah. I know we're going to be, you and I will be working off air here. We're working on our questions.
We've
been doing
next,
that for a long time. But can
what's
you
your favorite
give,
animal?
Yeah. Can you give people an idea of, like, what's a question you think that we're going to pose to them that we probably wouldn't hear if we were at a forum with Walz and Johnson in the Twin Cities?
One of the most frustrating things about following state politics is the stereotypes that you see about the rural-urban divide.
Yeah.
And that's an insurmountable thing. And that rural communities can be painted with a single brush as a single stereotypical rural, Trump-supporting, farm town, cows on the edge of town. We've got cows in the 8th District, and we've got cows in northern Minnesota, no doubt about it. But we know from living and working here that no matter your politics, conservative, liberal, or whatever, that there's a lot of variety and a lot of variation in people and their beliefs and hopes and dreams and what they do. So we know from living in rural Minnesota that housing is an issue that you don't talk about much in rural areas, but like affordable housing for seniors, for young families is an issue. We know that childcare and things like that are real issues in rural Minnesota that people face. When we talk about education and higher education and the need for distance education, things like that. Those are real factors. And of course, we know things like the mining issue are going to be a big factor in northern Minnesota. And we talk about it, I think, in a way that's a little closer to the logistical reality of those projects, just because we live in those communities. So that's just a sampling of the
right.
issues. There's a lot that I think we can ask about that would be relevant to rural voters that aren't just an opportunity for candidates to queue up their stereotype response. You know, gosh, tootin', we're gonna be serving them rural communities. You know, it's gonna be something more substantial than that.
Right. Well, we're almost out of time, but I do want to get to a couple of the other races that were interesting from the primaries yesterday in Minnesota. Senator Tina Smith.
Yeah.
It wasn't a surprise necessarily, I thought Painter would be bigger at the polls.
You know, I have a lot of liberal friends. I'm the liberal commentator.
Yes.
And I have a lot of liberal friends. And if you were watching my Facebook feed, you'd have thought Richard Painter was the second coming. Because a lot of progressives, particularly environmental progressives, had really bought into his message on the opposition to copper nickel mining, and had really enjoyed his performances on cable news nationally against President Trump, criticizing President Trump. And so Painter was considered, oh, maybe Painter has a chance. Well, no, no. He finished with 13%, which is almost like a statistical noise. It's not even really, it barely registered as like a bag of cement. I'm really in trouble for saying that. But like, you know, like the other random candidates who joined in only did a little worse than that. And Tina Smith was over 70%. And she was appointed to the seat. She's not considered rock solid, you know, the way Senator Klobuchar easily cleaned up, you know. But she did almost as well as Amy Klobuchar. So Tina Smith gets a gust of wind in her sails coming out of the primary, and she's got a tough race against Karen Housley, the Republican, in that race.
Yeah, will that be a tight race, do you think, Karen Housley?
Yeah, I think so, because the Republicans are going to put some attention on that race more than the Klobuchar race, and they put their best candidate in that race to go against Tina Smith, who was not as well known, who was appointed, and things like that. So, it'd be surprising. Obviously, it'd be indicative of a bigger trend if the Republican carried that Senate seat. But if they're going to carry anything statewide, it's that or the governor's race that's probably and the attorney general's race, which is complicated. So you know, Minnesota is not a solid blue state. Right. It is a swing state now, and it will settle in to be a very close race. And you know, though Republicans have had a run of bad luck in the last few cycles, you know, they're capable of winning, and they eventually will. And the question is when.
You can read, Aaron was live blogging last night. MinnesotaBrown.com is the address for his blog. You can check out, it's, he does analysis, and we get ready for this Governor's Forum next Tuesday. Before we go, though, let's talk Attorney General. Your thoughts on that race?
Well, we had another eighth hour, normally you call them October surprises, but of course it's August. But over the weekend, Keith Ellison, leading candidate for Attorney General for the DFL, was accused of a very serious domestic assault, not in court, but by a former girlfriend publicly. Actually, her adult children raised the issue initially, and it was Ellison strongly denied the charge, but it was very damaging, and her description of the story was very disturbing. And the question was, were the people who supported Ellison going to vote for somebody else? Was Ellison in trouble? Well, he fairly easily won the primary, and probably a lot of that was early voting that already had voted for him. But even so, it looked like he won. But now there's this whole question, is are these charges true? And he's denied them and all that. But, you know, he was already running against a Republican, Doug Wardlow, who was hitting him hard. A very, very aggressive campaign by Republicans to pick up the Attorney General's office, which they haven't held in longer than anything. Mm-hmm. It's been a DFL office for a long time, and they really are would love to get a crack at Ellison now. And they've even been using Ellison in some of the negative campaigning against other Democrats. So we're going to see more of that. And I think the Ellison campaign has to address these matters. I mean, you can't ignore it. It's a major issue and raises a lot of questions. If there is a video, which is what the accusation said, and the video shows any kind of bad behavior, Democrats will have to look at their options in that race.
You know, I was struck by last night, because I'm not someone who just usually sits and watches Twitter, but mm-hmm. I was last night,
yeah,
because there's really interesting stuff going on. So I have TweetDeck all open. I'm following, mm-hmm. you know, District 8. I'm following Minnesota politics. And I'm struck by how much we really need to pay attention to where our information is coming from.
Yeah.
It's so easy to just read this tweet and think, because I would say at least five tweets I saw coming through regarding Keith Ellison saying that Democrats, I thought it was Democrats who were saying this, that Keith Ellison has to step down from this race.
Mm-hmm.
The way it was written, the tweet, was as if the Democratic Party was saying
this.
And then, you know, you click through a little bit and it was five different conservative organizations that were tweeting this, but it sounded like it was from somebody else. And I'm not saying it's Republicans this happens on both sides, but you know, in this fast paced world where you have your sources, you follow, but then you at night, you let your guard down and you check out Twitter.
So one of the things that I have observed, and one of the arguments I would make, I just mentioned earlier that people didn't seem as engaged, even though there's a lot going on, they didn't seem as engaged. I have found, and this is just me talking as a human now, the psychological toll of trying to figure out what's true and what's not true, what's an opinion and what's a fact, coupled with a tremendous amount of negativity and logical fallacies, it is a challenge for your brain, for your heart, for your physicality, for your emotions to follow politics. And that weighs on people, and a lot of people are checking out for their own good. And so in a situation like this, there are so many things to figure out what's true and what's not. And the timing of that accusation was very tricky. You know, if it happened 2 years ago, why the weekend before the election? That's a legitimate question. But on the other hand, we want to treat accusations equally and fairly. But there's no room for that kind of conversation in our world. It's a never-ending assault on the senses to try to follow this. And so I felt that way. And a lot of people, I think a lot of Democrats probably just said, you know, I was for Ellison before, and I'm just going to go along with this. And so, we'll see how that all plays out. He deserves due process. Everybody deserves due process. But it's a mess for Democrats. There's no doubt about that in the attorney general's race. And it could affect other races, but mostly I'd say, step back. You know, the work that I know journalists get a lot of criticism, but I look at work like you're doing, Heidi, here with all those interviews you did last week, and work that some other good journalists in this state are doing to give you the candidates in their own words, the truth. Other media outlets have been exploring this story. I'd encourage you to check it out and read what the facts are, because it's so important to make an informed decision, and it's so easy to make an ill-informed decision in our current environment.
On that positive note.
but it's a nice day. It's beautiful. It's sunny. And
the primaries are finally done.
And that's so one good thing.
We're moving on.
We're moving on to new things. Labor Day is just around the corner.
Don't forget, you can join us whether you're watching on TV next Tuesday. Lakeland Public Television or other public TV in the Twin Cities will be carrying us live, as well as ICTV. And of course, live on KEXE, KBXE, and other stations like ours. But the really good thing to do would be to come there with witness for yourself who is running for governor in this race. Tickets are free. Go to rifecenter.org. It's next Tuesday, August 21st. Starts at 6 o'clock. Coming up, we'll have more from Katie Carter and Area Voices. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks.